This is the Valley Outdoors, and we are excited to have you guys with us this week. We got some cool stories coming up. I think something that you are never going to believe, Donald. Never going to believe. And I can't tell you what it is until we come back. But it's you, Donald, myself, and Ava, and I am shot out of a cannon, so we're going to have a fun show today. Stay tuned. More Valley Outdoors coming right up. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Merry Christmas, Donald.
Merry Christmas to
Ava.
All.
Merry Christmas.
Yep, absolutely. Hope everyone out there is having one of those. So it's always a good thing.
Music will come on later.
Music will come on later.
Unless you're listening on Sunday. Hopefully the Christmas music will be done for you.
Right.
But if it's Christmas Day,
it still will play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
None in the show, though.
No. So I thought it would be wise, kind of the wise men thing, I'm feeling the Christmas theme, wise for us to have an education. Don seems to think skiing has nothing to do with the outdoors.
I never said that.
We never want me to follow it. Well, there we go.
No, we can follow it. No, we don't want to go there, do we?
No.
We don't want to go there,
you sure?
Do we? Yes.
Yeah, what? She did win the Giants song last week.
Now with the shift run report.
Nope. Hey, Breezy won. First time she's won. Breezy from United States. Actually won the first time she's been on the podium. She won an event. So downhill. That was a big deal. U.S. ski team. So U.S. ski team is rocking. So the guys just got a victory first time downhill in 5 years on the World Cup. So that's not what I'm talking about, though,
okay.
Donald.
Good.
You're going to think I'm making up a word. Skunting. It's the ancient art of hunting on skis.
Really?
Mm-hmm. The origin of skiing and hunting. Chinese, Russians, and Scandinavians were all early adopters. And in fact, they have been riding on the snow for over 5,000 years, Don. You're not buying it.
It's kind of why they have the biathlon.
Yeah, but this is different. So what they do is... They call it a post-holing, or they take a post or a long stick, and yep. Then they push with that side to side. So I have one long stick. It's kind of like paddling, only you're doing it with...
On skis?
On skis.
And you're hunting.
And you're hunting.
So you got a rifle on your back?
It would be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So traditional ski hunting firsthand, this individual that had written this particular story... with the Kazakh tribesmen of Central Asia. And he wrote the practice was used in hunting Asian elk on skis. He said it looked like a sub-zero rodeo where they run down elk in deep snow using a lasso and a pair of rudimentary planks on their feet.
They're doing this today, are they?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily today, but they will be.
Okay.
So what are they using for weapons? There are a number of them. They're using a bolt-action rifle, very few parts, which is the reason that they do that. And they do use a scope. And the barrels can be any length possible. But isn't this fantastic, Don?
Why are they running them down? You can shoot them 300 yards from anywhere.
Well, because you want to separate the bigger ones from the smaller ones.
Oh, okay.
Swiftness of a cross-country ski allows a skier to cover more ground and sustaining a movement combined with frequent pauses, pressures, rabbits, and other small game. Because it could be elk, it can be rabbit, it can be anything. They're going to do this on skis. And what the important part here was, Don, in my mind, was that you can actually do this. It's still going on right now. And not just a mode of transportation are cross-country skis. It is also a mode of hunting and being in that actual tribes do. They've been doing it forever and ever. So skiing does have a link to hunting. And forevermore, now I have that capability of making sure
talking
you know
about
that.
It.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He just wanted
I think
to
I
make
would
sure.
Go, I would go with snowshoes, to be honest.
Why?
Because it's a lot safer.
I don't
you said rudimentary skis, so I'm just going to get
no,
two. They're flopping around with 2x4s on their feet.
Don.
What?
They have amazing wide skis with edges that I happen to have, similar to Telemark, but they're a backcountry ski, and they have permanent scales on the bottom, so you're able to go forward and fly virtually. And if the snow is hard, you can still dig in an edge. Boots are warm, gaiters, the apparel. That's the only – okay, so this is the this is the one thing that I would say that it would be a challenge, and I think that this is a point of conversation. Normally in hunting, we always talk about going into a stand, and you have to be careful you don't work up a sweat. Wouldn't you work up a major sweat if you're cross-country?
Trust me, you will.
Would that?
Yes.
Now, if you're active and chasing, if you're chasing, then it doesn't matter because you're going – you're obviously –
You said it was like a rodeo. I was picturing you're going to rope them.
Well – if you think about it, that's one way to do it. The other way, I mean, there's multiple methodologies to go hunt. You can do a lasso, which in that case, I'm serious, would not be, in my mind, the optimal thing to do when you're on skis.
No, because you can go ski during then.
That's called ski during. Yeah, see, yes. Don, it all fits in. I'm glad you're on board now.
Oh,
I like how you jumped on the bandwagon. See how that worked?
Easy.
So yeah. I love it. That's John.
I've played with those kind of skis. They're not that easy.
You do it on downhill, actually. In Steamboat, they do ski during with the horses down Main Street, and then they go over jumps.
No. Nope.
And that's no joke. I'm not getting a big festival.
I would hurt myself.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. Important factor right now. We brought it up before, more so than ever with the warm weather that we had during the week within the Midwest, kind of an unseasonably warm day or two that we've had this week. Cautions about if you're going out on the ice, you're not going to be going out on the ice in skis, which is great because if you fell in, you'd probably be in trouble. But in this case, if you go out, make sure you are considering what the ice has been and what it has been as far as temperatures, freeze, and thaw, because right now there are weird conditions going on. I talked to a couple of my buddies up north, and they said they've got pockets where it had melted through, and it is ice in one section. The wind blew a section open, and that ice is literally 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch that they don't know what happened, how it got that thin, but
cautious.
Blew open. So DNR is putting that out as a real key because there's a lot of people that are starting to bring ice their big houses out right now. So I'd say be cautious. Make sure you're checking it. Don't assume anything. And make sure your Christmas is a safe and your holidays because a lot of people have the whole week off.
You want it to be merry.
Yeah.
If your ice house went through, it would not be.
No.
No, it'd be a sad day.
No, it would. Yeah, you turn your ice house into a boat, and that's not a good thing.
Right.
Not even remotely. So we'll tell you what, Don. We are going to come back. Got some cool stories. Talk a little bit about the winter wolf hunt in Wisconsin. What's going on there. And a Florida police officer that found himself on a couple koozie critters when he had a little accident he found. So that and more when we return. Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you with us. And we always like to have you guys check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com and
Facebook, of course.
Yeah, of course. Lots of cool stuff on the website. It's updated, fantastic, superbly done, and kind of fun stuff that's there. Checking the links, checking everything that's on there. If you have any questions on seasonality within a state that you're looking at going hunting or fishing or whatever, punch on the area you want to go to. It'll come up with the DNR. You can just go from there.
Everything you need to know.
Let your fingers do the walking, as they say. So I did that this week for this show, and I came across a story that lists the most impressive fish caught in 2021.
Where was it caught?
This is all over.
Oh, the whole country?
Yeah.
The most impressive fish.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most impressive fish. There's a bunch of them. So Minnesota's one of those stories. We did one just recently.
Right.
Okay. That broke a big record. There's a 43-year-old Michigan state record that was broken. So lots of good ones in here. Let's start from, we'll just start from the back. How about that, Don?
Well, how many are there?
There's 20.
Yikes.
20 good ones.
Okay.
Yeah. The North Carolina dinosaur blue catfish. They caught a new record North Carolina blue catfish, and I thought it was important that I brought this one up, Ava. You know why, of course.
Because Don's the master.
Exactly, the master. Downright monster. 127.1 pounds. It smashed the previous record of 121 pounds.
What would you do with that? Put it back.
I don't know. The comment from the gentleman that caught it, Rocky Baker, was, it felt like pulling a Volkswagen up the river.
Against the current.
Against the current. Of course. Of course. Have you guys ever been out at seafood and had triple tail?
Nope.
Absolutely the most amazing flavor fish. It was, it's really, really good.
Triple tail.
Triple tail, they call it. Yep, yeah. Look it up sometime.
Never heard of it.
It's amazing fish. If you ever go out to eat, see if you can get triple tail, it's a delicacy. So this six-year-old girl, Mirabella O'Brien, caught a 16-pound, 5-ounce triple tail was out with her dad, and he's a charter captain. It is an IGFA female small fry record for the species. Hooked it all by herself, and end of story. Is that crazy? 16 yeah, pounds.
I wouldn't even know what it looks like.
It looks like the whole back of the fish is one tail, but they're separated. So it's like this flared top dorsal fin that comes way back. Adipose comes way back. And then the center kind of fills it in. So there's three tails. It looks like three tails, even though there's only one. Just the length of the two top and bottom. So pretty cool. Number 18, prehistoric alligator gar. The record gar was so big, you could hardly lift that out of the water. Freshwater monster was too big for one person to hold out of the water. The angler, Jennifer Schall, landed the brute. 132-pound alligator gar. It is a 50-pound IGFA test class. So They rank it based on the pound test that you catch it in. Goes down with the largest freshwater fish records ever recorded by a female angler. She caught on a fishing trip with her husband in the Trinity River in Texas. And the two of them tallied up a total of 13 IGFA records on the two-week trip. Is that crazy?
They both got records?
13 of them combined, the two of the husband and wife. Because they can go with different line classes, and they can get each line class record.
Okay. So you start
with, geez.
You know, 6-pound test, 10-pound test.
I guess.
Go right on up.
If you catch the big fish, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, why not, right?
What weight line did you catch the big one on?
50-pound.
Okay.
Yep. Number 17, Lunker Peacock Bass. You ever seen those?
Oh, yeah.
Some of the,
yeah.
They are the most fighting fish. Just crazy.
Didn't catch that in the United States.
What's that?
Didn't catch that in the United States.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Okay. Florida is home to a number of peacock bass.
Little do I know.
The biggest one in state history was caught this year, Felipe Prieto. Caught a nearly 10-pound monster while fishing Broward County Pond. Just pitched a random spot, and line started peeling out of my hands at 100 miles an hour. When I set
Sounds
the hook,
like an invasive species to me.
No, it's not. It's amazing. So that was a pretty cool one. World record paddlefish. Big fish. In Montana, you got it on a set of bow fishing record. You caught it on that particular one. Yeah.
Are these national records?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So pretty impressive.
Was that 4-peck?
It might have been.
Okay.
Might have been. Let's see. Go to number 16, Big Sky Brown Trout, new state, Montana state record. Hands down, the most impressive record catches of the year. Montana, of course, is known for trout. He landed a 32.43-pound brown trout in the Murray River in March. Broke the record from 1966.
You know, when they get that big, they don't even look like the fish you're thinking of.
No, they don't. It's unbelievable. Yep. You know what he caught it on?
I don't.
Castmaster and 4-pound test line.
Oh, he played that one for a while.
That's crazy. That's absolutely great. I mean, it's that size fish. That's unbelievable. So let's see. Idaho steelhead. We'll start going through some of these here quick. 36-inch 2017 was the record, broken in 2019 by another angler. And now they reclaimed the title that he broke in 2019 with a 39.25-inch steelhead. He's the only person in Idaho history to set the state catch and release record twice.
That's a big rainbow.
Yeah, it is. Let's see. Bucket mouth. Big head carp. We know about those down here. Invasive species. And they are horrible. One of the guys is bow hunting. He arrowed a gargantuan 125-pound big head carp in July of this year in Missouri. And, of course, that's where they're primarily really going to town. So that's a big
Let's go deal. To the first game fish.
Oh, let's see. How about crappie?
Okay, that's a good one.
Okay. Let's see. 4 pounds, 7 ounce white crappie while fishing a small lake. And he not only smashed the previous record, which is 3 pounds, 13 ounce, but it's the largest crappie ever caught. This was in New York. And current record was 4 pounds, 1 ounce. So he beat it by over 6 ounces. Pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oldest fish ever. Another big mouth. It was 112 years old. They actually aged it. 112-year-old, big mouth buffalo. Muskie. That was the one that we've talked about in Lake Mille Lacs. That has made the list. It's 55 pounds, 14.8 ounces. Bluegill. While it is the smallest fish on this particular list, it weighed nearly a pound and a half.
That's a big pumpkin seed.
Okay, now I'm going to follow it up with the one that's going to blow your mind.
Okay.
Thomas Farchione's sunfish weighed more than, how much you think, Don? Take a guess.
Sunfish. Is that the one that was caught down in Arizona? Lake Havasu?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was like 6 pounds or something.
6.3 pounds, IGFA world record, red ear sunfish. It was 17 inches long and a girth of 20 inches. I mean,
it's bigger around than it is long.
Exactly. I mean, it's like a block.
It's a pumpkin. Yeah,
yeah, no, it really is. So that's crazy. Catfish on a fly rod. 31-pound catfish landed on a 12-pound tippet on a fly rod. And he was all alone on that. He sight fished the 31-pound cat, blue cat. And that's a water body record for the river and an IGFA 12-pound tippet class record as well. And a four-weight fly rod.
Wow.
That, I don't know if you ever fished a four-weight fly rod before, but that is hardly anything there. So not good. Pretty weird deal. Two left. Beginner's luck. The Chinook landed. Showed off a 12-pound fish that made it look like this other fish was a ginormous. It was crazy. So a 12-pound Chinook, and it was right next to, yes, that was a record, 47.86 pounds out of Lake Michigan, and it set the record previously set at 46.6 pounds.
Chinook salmon?
Chinook.
What port were they out of? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
No, don't know. Last but not least, out of California, state record crappie, one of the first records to fall in 2021. California angler got a monster crappie, 4 pounds, 5.4 ounce black crappie, toppled the previous record of 4 pounds, 1 ounce that had stood for 46 years.
How long was it?
Didn't say.
Didn't say.
No.
It's a big crappie.
So, yeah, kind of a, I think that's an entertaining little tidbit to wrap up 2021 and some of the cool fish that have been caught across the United States. So stay tuned. We're going to be talking about visibility. What do fish see and what don't they see as far as colors go? You're not going to want to miss this. Don and I are having a little argument about this one. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
So, Don.
Yes.
The color debate continues.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this one.
So, two schools of thought can come into play. Obviously, you're looking at a lot of different fish that are in the world. You're dealing with bass, who deal with the lateral line, extensive lateral line detection. They detect vibration.
Right.
And they will reaction strike pieces and parts and that kind of
thing.
That's
why they put little rattles and
rattles. And they do that in a lot of, and a lot of fish will react to that, which is not a problem. So the article, it just kind of prompted the conversation. I think that's really more than anything, because I've actually talked to one of the science people from the University of Minnesota. We were at a sports show, and the topic came up. So I will give you his take at the end. We'll go through some of the conversation that I pulled on this particular article. And when we're looking at fish, in this particular case, they're similar to other vertebrates, including humans, because there's no air to cornea interfaces, the fish visual power is diminished by about 80% relative to us, meaning humans outside the water, we're in air. Further, due to certain properties of the water environment, water can be more of a variable visual scenario and make it more difficult to see, much less change what you're actually seeing in the water. So you're not sure exactly what you're seeing. Right.
So you're talking about murky water.
Murky water, right. Exactly. Or
it can like bend light. And
it bends exactly. It's a big thing. So how much light and what colors are visible depends on the conditions above and below. Cover like clouds, ice, algae, suspended particulates, vegetation, and aside from sharks, they have pupils with fixed diameter. That means that foraging success of species such as trout, they rely much more heavily on visual and their ability to see, track, and capture prey. So it really comes into a dependence on the external conditions for most every fish and the light that's going on. So that being said, when you look at when the light becomes less intense in deeper water, it changes visibility and the colors that are going to be effective change as well. So on one end of the spectrum, reds and oranges are most readily absorbed in the water. So those colors are most visible in shallow water. So reds and oranges. Darker blues and purples penetrate the deepest.
Are you saying that they're visible to the human eye or to the fish's eye?
In the fish. So when a bass are shallow in the spring, anglers often throw red crankbaits. Not only will these match the hatch, quote unquote, of typical crayfish prey in the early season and conditions, but they form a visual perspective, and that's when the colored lures are most visible in the course of shallow water. Colors that show up better in depth, like blue and purple and chartreuse, are popular for deep diving crankbaits. Of course, vision isn't the only sensory scenario, like we talked about, lateral lines.
Right.
That's a big thing as well. Rattles and dynamic action, that sets up a vibration in the water as well. Now, the other thing that comes up too, Don, you've seen a bunch of them with UV or glow.
Yes.
And speaking of fishing at the deeper depths, it's often some confusion among anglers when it comes to labeling and marketing lures with UV and glow in the dark colors. Some lures contain a UV coating that reflects UV light. Humans can't see that far of the spectrum. And other lures with a glow at night, they're often charged with UV light, essentially glowing lures. They store that light and bring it down to a different depth. So it can make a difference, especially at ice fishing where it's extremely dark most of the time. You've got that ice cover. And if you have snow, it's even more so dark or literally black. So from an elementary school science perspective, the examples where the fish have adapted their vision to where they live, some bioluminescent fish in the deep ocean, blind cave-dwelling fish, and, of course, other fish that live in South America. They have four pupils to see in various conditions. So lots of things that happen on that side of the fence. Now, here's what's interesting from the perspective at the University of Minnesota. I said, okay, I think that this particular lure works well. I don't know why. And it's called Parrot. I thought, because of chartreuse belly and or chartreuse lower half and a blue upper back, half, yeah. Right? And I thought, well, that's probably because of the combo. We know chartreuse is, but you said, no, that's not it. I said, it's not? And he said, no. It's the line that the blue and the green create when they meet. That's the reason the fish key in on that particular piece and they target it. I thought that's the craziest thing. He said, no. The only thing you actually see, that forms a line when you're in the water.
Sure.
I thought, what?
The separation between the two colors.
Exactly. Or yes. The actual conjunction creates.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is there's no, you can't see anything if there's not light involved. If you take the light away, I don't care what depth you're in. Now, the clarity of the water is huge based on what you're going to do there. So silhouette is probably, and the lateral mm-hmm. line has probably got more effect than the mm-hmm. colors.
And that's where the black came in. And that's where jigs of certain types that reflect UV, now black and UV, and that's why deer hair works so well, is because it reflects more UV than does a marabou or other man-made material. And, of course, the black in that environment looks like a minnow because, again, there's a lot of cloudiness that's going on and that kind of thing happens.
One thing I would add to it is I think scent has a big deal. When you're doing jigging, whether you're using scented plastics or actual
bait. But I would say that if it's a reaction scenario in lower light conditions, they're going to smack it before they actually smell it. So if it's slow trolling, I would say, yeah, but if you got a lot of action to it, then it can change the process. If they're finicky, it may change that as well. So one of those things that comes to play. Well, we have to bid everybody a good adieu and a Merry Christmas to all from us here at the Valley Outdoors, from Don, Ava, and myself, Eric. You guys have a fantastic Christmas, and we'll hope to see you guys or hear from you guys next week. See ya!